This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich. Thank you so much for being with us today. 20 years ago this weekend, Nelson Mandela was sworn in as president of South Africa. It was a pinnacle of a period of remarkable change in that country that included Mandela's freedom from prison after 27 years and the end of the apartheid era, in which blacks and other non-white South Africans were denied the rights and freedoms that whites had. Mandela won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1993. He was elected president a year later. While he left office in 1999 and died last year, the period of change he helped usher in still defines much about South Africa today, but not everything. Vuyiswa Tulelo has experienced that change, and now she's helping to shape her country's future. Tulelo grew up as apartheid ended and Mandela came to power. She's now Consul General for South Africa in the Midwest, based in Chicago. She tells Lake Effect's Bonnie North that her country is now about more than its past.
I usually say that for people to appreciate South Africa, you have to go and be with the people. One of the things that I found is the more I speak to people in the United States and I say I'm from South Africa, the first thing they say is Cape Town, Johannesburg. And I tell them that's not where the real South Africa is, because that's an equivalent of your Milwaukee, your Chicago, your New York. If you want to see the transformation that has taken place in South Africa, go to the townships, go to the rural communities. Realize that in 20 years, you've walked from a situation where white children would never set foot in the township to where they go for sleepovers in the township. You have come from a situation from where white people, irrespective of their economic status, would never live in the township, to a situation where now they live in an RDP house, which is afforded by government, their neighbors being predominantly black people. That's how far South Africa has come in this past 20 years. You've gone from a situation where schools were not on the basis of your intellectual capacity, but on the basis of the financial stability that your parents had, to where young people get bursary scholarships to be able to go to the best schools, not because of who they are or what the color of their skin is, but because of what is between their ears.
So it sounds that in that 20 years, there has been a huge amount of change and growth for the positive. How has the culture fared with that? Sometimes it takes a while for people to catch up to their own culture when it changes that quickly.
It is true. And I always make this example. I say that if you were in South Africa today and you met two young people who were born in 1994, let's say who were born in July 1994, they are preparing to turn 20 in July of this year, and you ask them who their best friend is, you would probably be surprised to hear what comes out of their mouth, because you would be sure that you are speaking to a young person in Milwaukee. They are so integrated into the global village that their South Africanness is only realized by those who have grown up around them and by those who've brought them up. So for the younger generation, they have really taken it to the next level. The people who are still suffering are the older generations, those who benefited of apartheid, those who are perpetuating apartheid, because they know where they come from. And they can't stand it to see their grandchildren walking hand in hand in the streets of South Africa with a black child. They can't stand it to see their grandchild in a preschool playing with another black child and saying, oh, this is my best buddy, because of where they come from and what they know happened in South Africa. And we have the middle age group, which is like my parents. They are struggling because although they did not really get the cold end of apartheid, but they really felt apartheid because they were the last breed of your Bantu education. And they have moments where they celebrate and they realize where South Africa has gone to, but they also have moments where they're trapped in a realization that, but our children are free. My mother lives with me in Chicago. And she is amazed every time when she meets someone or some of my colleagues in town with me, and they come to me and they say, oh, CG, and it would be a white woman. And she's like, you know, when I was your age, Vuyiswa, I had to bow down to the white woman. Now you have the white woman bowing down to you. And that's how far South Africa has come. But we have to realize that it is not a global thing. It is a generational thing. So you have to go back. You have to go to what we refer to as the bone freeze to see the actual effects of freedom and see my mother and realize how she has been able to free herself from the bondages of working for the white woman and respecting the white woman to being an equal citizen in her country with the white woman.
What does that mean for what it means to be South African? When you look at these 20-year-olds, and I know you've worked with a lot of youth, that has been something that has been really important in your career. How do you think they're going to define what being South African is for them?
I will tell you the truth, and it scares me because I look at my children. I have a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old. And I realize that their notion of South Africanness is completely different from mine. My notion is still hinged on the fact that, yes, I'm South African, but I'm a Xhosa. I want people to understand that I come from a specific ethnic group. My children only know that they're South African, and that's what is important. So if I walk with them in a store, if I go to the park with them, and their accent is American, but my accent is a little bit different, and people say, who is that? And they say, oh, it's my mommy. Where do you come from? And they say, oh, we're South African. That's what they know. So if you look at this born-free generation, they know that they are South African. They really don't have that hold on their ethnicity, on their culture. Because of the global village that they live in, their only understanding is that they were born in South Africa and they compete with the world on an equal footing, as opposed to my generation. Yes, we were the ones who received the first freedom of a new South Africa, but we're still entrenched in where we come from. So if you meet me and a white South African woman who is the same age as I am, we would probably say, oh, I'm Xhosa, and the other one would say, oh, I'm Afrikaans, the other one would say, oh, I'm English, before we say we are South African. But I can promise you this, in 20 years' time, you would have difficulty telling who is Xhosa, Zulu, Venda in a South African community, because their focus would be on their South Africanness and not their ethnical or cultural backgrounds.
But do you lose something when you lose that connection to your ethnicity?
You do. You do. And again, using my children as a case scenario, my daughter, who is 7, is starting to lose our local dialect. She can hear you when you speak in Xhosa, but she's unable to respond as frequently as she used to do. My boy is like in a pitch dark room. He don't know what you're talking about. And we speak Xhosa in the house all the time. And he looks at us and is like, why are you talking that strange language? And there is a good part of it, because he's in a free world. He gets the best education. He gets the best infrastructure. He can compete with other young people equally. But there is the part that he loses part of who he is. In this new democracy, we are creating this child that we cannot describe, whether they're South African, American, European, or what is it. And when you ask them, who are you? You know, in our cultures, when you introduce yourself, you say, you asked me, what's my name? I say to you, I'm Vui Swatulelo. That's how the Western society does. But in our cultures, when you ask me who I am, before I tell you what my name is, I have to tell you where I come from. I have to tell you who my parents are, who my parents' parents are, where they were born, where they were brought up, if I had any heroes or heroines in my bloodline, and then tell you I am the daughter of this clan. And we're losing that beautiful aspect of who we are.
You talked about young people taking advantage of what South Africa has to offer in terms of economics. What is the state of small business development in South Africa? I know you guided young entrepreneurs in South Africa before. Are things good? Are things looking good?
This morning, before I came here, I switched on WTT, I think it's a public channel in Chicago, and BBC World Focus on Africa was playing. And they had this 10-minute advert of different strands of young people in South Africa who were saying in their own words how democracy has worked for them. And the one that stood out for me was this young couple. They are in their early 20s. They are both chartered accountants. Now, firstly, you'd never find a chartered accountant that is black in South Africa, especially a woman. Now you have a young woman with her husband who are both chartered accountants who are going into your previously white suburbs to go and look for a house. And she said, if it was not for this democracy in South Africa, I would not have had the access to education. I would not be able to compete equally with my peers and search for this house in a historically white suburb. On the other spectrum, they had a young man from the township and a social entrepreneur, if you wish. And he says, I got involved with the wrong crowd at a very early age. I was arrested for stealing a cell phone. I went to jail for some time. I came out, and when I came out, I found out about the National Youth Development Agency, which helps young entrepreneurs to set themselves up. And he has the mobile stand, and he fries his chicken. And because he does this on a small capacity, he has to have good refrigeration. He has to have the ability to know when his meat is about to go off or not to go off. So he has to have good food understanding and things like that. And he got the support from the National Youth Development Agency to go and study this thing. This is from stealing a cell phone, going to jail, coming back to setting up your own little business. And I'm talking about these two extremes so that people don't only think that you're looking at the good side of the story. These ones had an opportunity to go to school. They made it. This one had only the policy framework to help him. And he took that chance. And for me, that's what is available for young entrepreneurs in South Africa. It's not about who you are, who you know, or where you come from, but it's about your passion, your zeal, and your commitment to make use of the infrastructure that is there.
And I was going to say, it sounds like there is an infrastructure there to take advantage of, which is key. I mean, you can have all of the enthusiasm in the world, but if there's nothing there to help you, it sounds like South Africa has taken that very seriously.
I will say this. One of the things that South Africa really did excellent was not to leave the youth outside of the freedom of victories. Once it became apparent that there was going to be a new government in South Africa, the opposition parties then against the apartheid came together and said, what do we do about the youth? Because these youth were key to bringing about this change. And it is because of those struggles of the youth that you had the establishment of the then National Youth Commission, which was responsible for advising government on youth development policies. And it had a three focus, if you wish. It had on education to make sure that young people had access to education and what they needed to do. It had a focus on social cohesion, and that it focused on service, creating service opportunities in our communities, firstly, to serve our own communities, but secondly, to empower ourselves. Because one of the most frustrating experiences any young person can get is the question, do you have experience? I'm sure you've had this question even in the United States. A young person comes with a beautiful curriculum vitae, top marks from his class. They ask, where have you worked before? I just graduated last month. How could I have had a job? Nobody wants to take the risk. And youth service programs were trying to help young people to get that on-job training. And then there was the entrepreneurship position where you helped young people who didn't necessarily want to go and get a job but wanted to create their own jobs through having funding available for them, through having mentorship available for them. And then when we realized that the policy framework was not enough, you needed to have practical guidance, we established what we call the Umsobomvu Youth Fund, which was mainly focusing on entrepreneur development for young people. But we also came to a realization that you can't have 50 people talking about youth development as if they're not talking to each other. And that's why the National Youth Development Agency, because you took the policy initiatives, you took the economic initiatives and social cohesion, and you put them in one pot, and you said, you are now responsible to make sure that policy environment is correct and conducive for young people to thrive in it. Economically, they not only have the policy support, but they have the economic back rolling. If a person wants to start a company, he can get a loan from you. But socially, they talk to each other. Because there's no sense in you having the Africans talking in the other corner, the whites in the other corner, and these young people not talking to each other. And that's why this cultural infusion, if you wish, if you're looking at the Bonfires, because they are forced to talk to each other.
In the next 20 years, what do you hope for your country?
Three things in the next 20 years. Increase in education institutions, especially higher learning education institutions, and especially focusing in the STEM area. We know, and everybody knows, that South Africa is great at mineral resources, but what we lack in is the beneficiation of those resources. So if we could have institutions, and part of the things that I go out, one of my passions when I go out to meet universities is to find out if they have programs that deal with beneficiation and production of raw material and see how we can take that back to South Africa. Secondly, is to see South African young people travel and conquer the world. Not only do I want them to come to the United States for a year or for 2 years, but I want them to come here, imbue the United States with who South Africa is, the people of South Africa. And I always say to people, it's easy to get tourists over to South Africa. It's easy to get an exchange program to South Africa for 3 weeks. I'm not looking for that. I'm looking for sustainability. If you're going to enter into agreement with South Africa, at least tell me that we are planning for the next 3 years. Don't say, I don't want to have one tick on my box that, yes, I got 10 students over to South Africa. I want to say I got an agreement between the University of Wisconsin and the University of Cape Town that for the next 3 years, they will be shuttling students between each other. And these are the areas that they'll be focusing on. So I don't just want South Africans to come out, but I want them to welcome the world back into South Africa. Thirdly, I want South Africa to be the tourist destination. My country is beautiful. And I tell people, I'm a salesperson. If you ask me what I sell South Africa. My country is beautiful. My people are beautiful. But the only way you can find that out is if you go to the people of South Africa. Not what the media tells you. Not where people refer you to because they've been in Johannesburg for 2 hours and they say it's the best place in the world, or they've been in Cape Town for 3 hours. Go to where the people are. Meet the people. Live with that people. And get bitten by the South African bug. And I promise you, you will get back on that flight to the United States, but you will not finish a year without going back to South Africa.
Well, I'm looking forward to going because I haven't been yet. Mm-hmm. And I very much, it's been a place I've wanted to go for years. And you have convinced me even more that I want to do it.
Thank you.
So, Madam Consul General, it has been such a pleasure having you in the studio. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for the beautiful conversation.
Bushwa Tulelo is Consul General of South Africa in the Midwest, based in Chicago. She spoke with Bonnie North on a recent visit to Milwaukee to speak at UWM's South African Freedom Day event. Since a lightning-fast start, the Milwaukee Brewers have been on a bit of a downhill trajectory of late. We'll find out whether there's cause for concern in Brewers Nation when Lake Effect returns on Milwaukee Public Radio.